too many Tic Tacs in the town.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 3:38 starting time. Please welcome from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, Matthew Wiley. Play away, please.
Oh, Golf Lindy 166. No. Jack White. He did SNL this weekend. He was an unexpected musical guest because I think the previously scheduled guest was out non-masked at bars and they said, no thanks. So they filled in with the god of guitar, or a god of guitar, Jack White. Which is funny because Eddie Van Halen died. That's not the funny part. Eddie Van Halen was a god, was one of the gods of guitar. The funny part was I had just been watching, because of the whole Eddie Van Halen dying, I went deep down YouTube rabbit holes about the best guitarists of all time. Jimmy Page, pretty clear number one. It's funny. The funny part is too, is that, or the very cosmic, magical part of music is that Led Zeppelin, you basically had the best drummer ever, John Bonham. The best one, top two, top three lead singer, rock singer ever, in Robert Plant, and the best guitarist. What a meld. That band just set the bar so high, Led Zeppelin, for any other band that came after it. Just disgustingly good. But they did this show called, it Might Get Loud. And they had Jimmy Page, The Edge from U2, and don't bang on U2. I'm a huge U2 fan. And then Jack White. All great guitarists in their own right. But Jimmy Page is Einstein, right? This guy was, look at the old 70s live concerts. There's one at Madison Square Garden with Jimmy Page. And by the way, the golf this week is pretty light. Ryan on my segment went 16 minutes. No cut event, CJ Cup. I'm going to try to fill some airspace. So bear with me. But when Jimmy Page did this show with Jack White and The Edge, he started playing A Whole Lot of Love, and their jaws dropped. I mean, they were like children. Jack White's face is like, why am I here? Incredible guitarist in his own right, but he's just like, I'm not worthy of this moment. I should be at Guitar Center tuning guitars, watching Jimmy Page teach me, show me what he did for Kashmir. And then they all had to share stories, and of course they get to Jack, and Jimmy Page is like, so tell me about Seven Nation Army. Jack White's like, oh, I don't want to. Please don't make me. It's in every stadium in the NFL. So that was interesting. But welcome to Golf Landy 166. I tried to open with another banger. That's slowly turning into you, Jack White. That was live from, I think, Yellowknife? The Northwest Territories? What a great artist. And he's a tough guy, too, by the way. Look at some of Jack White's fights. Bar fights. He takes no guff. But I read this book, and then I'm going to go right into golf. Just bear with me. If you want to skip to the Ryan segment, do it. If you do that anyway, go ahead. If you don't listen, then there's no problem. Because you're not even listening to this. I read this book called Reframing Healthcare. I don't suggest you read it. I do suggest you read it, but it's pretty girthy from a healthcare perspective, but from a brand and a marketing, it's just a very good way to summarize where brand creation and marketing should be and is going in the 20th century, 2020 and beyond. And some of the things that healthcare has missed, but really it's almost every industry. It's a good roadmap, schematic, blueprint, whatever word you want to use, noun, to describe some of the things I've talked about historically. And ultimately, and it's a simple point, but they describe it really well using healthcare as an example, is that healthcare's problem is that they have never been marketing from a consumer standpoint. They've always been marketing from, we are the best doctors in the world, we've got the best science, and you're here as a patient. And they wonder why patients always give negative reviews at their hospitals. What is the disconnect? Because they've always treated them as patients and never treated healthcare spenders as consumers of healthcare. And so, I'm going to roll this into fantasy sports, and then we're going to roll into Ryan. I'm going to bring this all together. I'm going to steer this ship away from an iceberg. But Barstool Sports is a great example. You know, and the way that they've developed something that they found the gap, either intentionally or unintentionally, in the marketplace of what people actually wanted from content consumption in the real media. They don't want the suit and tie, you know, behind the plexiglass, I'm a star. Really the Colin Cowherd model. Nothing against him. He's got a huge following, a trillion downloads. But this is an entirely different format, which I think this next generation is going to eat up more and more. But, you know, they developed something in the marketplace that was lacking, and they did it because they focused on what the consumer wanted. What is it, and I've always talked about this, what is it that the consumer is looking at when they're purchasing a label? And it's not as simple as sports talk or gibberish. They've really made, and you know, Barstool said it last week, that it came down to content, costs, and passionate consumers. That's what made them successful. Yes, totally agree with that. To do a production for some of these shows, even like Golf Channel shows, ones that you think would be simple to put together, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's crazy. The costs. I couldn't imagine what an ESPN full set show would cost. So they took that out and just made good content. It also helped that they had a transcendent content creator in Dave Portnoy that formed his own cult. Let's not kid ourselves. That is the biggest part of that vehicle. Period. And without him, you know, he could go off on his own and just start Portnoy Sports and it'd make $1 trillion. And I'm not sure what would happen to Barstool. But he certainly is the ringleader for that shop. And I think, you know, especially during COVID when he just grinded out content every day, I think that really cemented for him even more. And then let's jump to fantasy sports, which we're all invested in. It's made careers for people. It's made money for a lot of people. It is a DraftKings alone, multi-billion dollar market cap company and only going to grow as they further land grab around the country with their brand. Wildly successful company. Not perfect by any means, but wildly successful. And it's been great for so many people in this industry. But what did they do? I mean, people played fantasy sports and gambled. But fantasy sports, because it gave them an edge and a rush and some dopamine with the game every week, other than just being a fan of a sport. Because there's so many other options now for content that gives you that excitement or drama or lift or tension that live sports, when it was the only thing on television and there were 80 million viewers, it just wouldn't, it just won't hold it alone. We've seen that statistically in golf. Why are they, why is the PGA partnered now with DraftKings? Why are we seeing the NFL having in-game ads for DraftKings? 3 years ago, if you remember this, I talked about this 3 years ago. I said, this is going to come. And people said, no, people still watch golf because of Tiger. Tiger is the ratings. And what were we called back then? They were repulsed by it. You couldn't find gambling or DraftKings anywhere close to a golf course. They banned them, effectively. And what were we called? Nerds. I don't want to hear about your nerd fantasy team. Really? How's that going now? Considering it's propping up the entire industry of live sports. But what they focused on, what the companies like DraftKings did was, is that they made each game experiential using technology and your phone and your app. It gave you different options for each game rather than being a season-long thing between 8 or 10 friends or a pool. This became massive money, millions of dollars each week that you could play, reset, play again for pretty low-stakes entry, right? And it gave a lot of satisfaction versus just, you know, doing a parlay with the Bills and the Bengals, lose. That it gave you investment and research and analytics. I mean, look at someone like Empire Maker. If you don't think that he is, you know, playing four-dimensional chess with this stuff, then you probably haven't watched a lot of podcasts or a podcast with him on it, which I watched the other day, just to learn what makes someone like him successful in this business. But there's a lot of satisfaction and value that's driven from that, from putting in all the research and then outthinking other people, like a chess move, like Garry Kasparov. And they cornered that. They cornered that emotion with developing daily fantasy sports like DraftKings did. Ingenious, really. But the thing is, with this FanDuel issue, if you haven't heard, FanDuel, all of you know the issue, but there was no live scoring Sunday for the big NFL contest. No one, I think to this, it's Monday night Eastern time, no one, I think right now still knows who won the contest, how many points they got, which is horrendous for players who play like $1 million a week or $500,000 a week, and there are guys who do that, is that they need to know how they're doing real time because they make changes so they don't lose $500,000 in the contest or know what to play later on. The biggest part, and so FanDuel's in a PR crisis right now, it seems, because their resolution to this issue was absolutely not sufficient. I don't play FanDuel. I play DraftKings only, so I'm not I don't have any investment in this fight. But I can see how it makes people, especially large players and even low stakes players, very upset. The reason why is that what these fantasy, I said this for 3 years additionally. At the end of the day, companies like DraftKings and FanDuel, what are they? They're transaction companies. I mean, yeah, they provide UI and user experience, and they're able to get a lot of flies to the honey here and provide these massive contests. Like Yahoo has a great platform too, but they just don't drive the volume of players to make it worthwhile for people to play it necessarily. But they're transactional. It's a transactional platform. Essentially, they're taking in money, skimming off a rake, and then distributing it out. It's like PayPal. And that's why DraftKings is just doing this massive land grab now so that they could get to permanently freeze in their brand and get market share and users, and that's going to be their protective wall here. That's going to be their barrier. Because otherwise, you know, had the NFL 3 years ago said, you know what, we're going to do contests every week and we're just going to give away $1 million. We don't even need you to put money in. We'll be the transactions. We'll feed it out. We'll do it. That would have been a real problem for DraftKings et al. But the key here is that since it's a their play is technology and user experience and transactions, it's a tech play, period. And so their tech has to work constantly because there's so much at stake for some of these people that if it doesn't, it's a major crisis at all times. It's like, what if PayPal went down? What if a hospital system's, you know, infrastructure, grid, technology, healthcare data went down or was exposed? What if credit card companies went down? There are certain people, I don't put it on that level necessarily, but there are certain tech plays that just cannot fail because that is the entire business model. That is who they are, especially during the biggest contests of the week on Sunday when there's so much at stake. And I know tech can fail, but the remedy was so poor, it was almost insulting to just give people a refund up to maximum of $100 credit. And for someone like Empire Maker, what did he say? He played $8 million in rake last year alone to FanDuel, just to FanDuel? That's $250 million, by my math, at least, in gameplay. Pays them $8 million in rake, and they're going to give him $100? He's going to go nuts, and he should. That is crazy. You've got to pay attention to the customers that are using it, especially people like that. And understand that maybe refunding, paying out the winnings and then refunding all entries and eating the $4 million or whatever it is dollar loss is the best marketing spend you could ever pay for in your life, not a Super Bowl ad or not James Harrison tackling someone on TV. Because now, not that this, you know, some people just get mad, they get over it, but, I mean, DraftKings is just licking their chops. Because again, this is about how many people can I get to this hive? How quickly can I spread? Because that's my protection. Because ultimately, it's just technology. It's just a transaction play. It's like anyone can recreate Facebook, the technology, but they have the users. TikTok, same thing. They've got the users. DraftKings, it's a social play. It's a tech play with a huge quick land grab and now a ton of resources. But to give $100 credit is somewhat obscene. And bringing this full circle from that book I originally talked about, Reframing Healthcare and Marketing in the 20th century, 21st century. What century are we in? Where am I? What is podcast? But bringing the 21st century in marketing and really speaking authentically to a consumer and understanding what it is they want from you, that's how these companies got here. But now to maintain these users and keep them happy, you probably need to listen to the ones that are spending the most money and have the most influence in this space, which someone like him does. And that's it. Pay out everyone. Refund anyone who didn't make money. Say we're sorry. Eat the $3 million that costs. Maybe the best $3 or $4 million ever spent in your life. Call up Empire Maker and say, hey, how can we make this right? We're a soundboard. We want this to be good. We want to keep you. We want to keep people like you. How do we do it? I wonder if they did that. It's the first thing they should have done. What do I know? Let's talk to Ryan. Cash take you on a natural joint.
Queen, get the money. Tiger Woods, y'all.
All right, first of all, we are mega losers in Showdown, and Taysom Hill should not be playing in the NFL. ever.
Let alone what getting paid $15 million a year.
How? What happened there?
He had a couple of good games. Sean Payton seems to love him. Uses him goal line, a lot of other Wildcat formations, but I mean, he's been horrible this year.
This week, speaking of horrible, it's not a great week for DraftKings or, you know, probably even any form of betting, honestly, a no-cut event. CJ Cup, which is not in Jeju Island in South Korea.
Yeah, it's sad that we're not there. That's always a fun to watch night golf.
Do you know who was born there?
I don't.
Sun Jae-im.
Ah, interesting.
Let me check that. Keep talking, because
I feel like I've heard that, so it probably sounds right. But no, that course is awesome. They have the par five with the island green type thing, and yeah,
it's what made it exciting to watch golf at night. Now it's just the racket that Tiger and Phil put together. That course, Shadow Creek. Now that's a beautiful course in the middle of a desert. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
but it brings back memories of that event.
How bad did they play, man?
It was just rough. The course, though, a lot of people have been, so they know. When you go to Vegas and you're lucky enough to play it, a lot of guys who go to Vegas have played it. But they set it up pretty long. These are from Mike's notes. Greensquare.golf. Greensquare.golf. It's all form this week. There are no course histories. Not for the Scottish Open. Not for this. So it's all recent form. But the notes are par 72, 7,500 yards long. Fazio design, flattish to tree-lined parklands. How do you put a tree-lined parkland
in Vegas?
The middle of the desert?
Yeah. They do anything with trees, yeah. No, it's a cool course for sure. It's going to be fun to watch it, yeah.
Length, heat, green complexes, water and play, nine holes, 74 bunkers, Bermuda overseed fairways, rough Bermuda overseed, not... knee deep if you stray too off the fairways. Bent grass greens, 12 stimp, not very large. Looks like a driving distance course. Looks like a well playing golf course. That's basically I do better. Not that that means much. If I don't over scrutinize the data and just go with what players are playing okay and do they seem value from a price standpoint. Bam. And so now you have a no-cut event. So it's right. So it's going to be what guys? It's stars and scrubs.
Well, that's balance. The thing. Yeah, I mean that's the thing. Look, when we played this event in South Korea, you lock in JT for 14K and you play five scrubs. It's pretty easy. But this week, it's like there's a lot of really good players here. So it's not like you play the guy who's 4.5 to 1, and then you pick five birdie makers. We play Perez and Steele and Griot and those guys, but now it's like you have Rory and JT and Brooks and DJ and Xander. Like, there's a lot of stuff here. So, I'm historically horrible at no cut events, so I won't be playing much. But I feel like it's a week to just go with balanced birdie makers.
Yeah. So here is if you wanted to play the top, if this is a long strategic driving course, not strategic driving course, but a good, good driver of the ball course. I just have seen some content recently with Rory McIlroy working on his driver. Not that he needs to, but I feel he's in a different place now that he has the baby. And I believe that that's lifted a lot of, thought off his mind, and he's just has this different bounce to him. I like Rory and DJ. Wow. Huge take. I know.
I mean, what? I'm with you. Like, I ran a couple different versions of my model, and my top five are Xander, Rory, Rom, JT, DJ. So not super helpful there.
No. But in the mix, the names that stood out that surprised me, because they're going to be here for 4 days, granted, not in the best form, but Cam Champ at 6.4, I thought that was pretty low for him.
I agree in this sort of format, no-cut event, yes.
Bubba, 7.3.
Lock.
Gary, even though he's not playing Gary level, 7.7 Gary on 4 days of birdies and a long course, might be a lock.
Yeah, I mean, this is the range. You just have to get the right two or three guys from the 7K range who are going to either borderline top five or just make a lot of birdies. So obviously Bubba fits that mold for sure. The other guy who's, I don't know, he's showing up a lot for me is Noren. I think that makes a lot of sense for a guy who can get really, really hot with a putter and you know, historically is a good iron player. I think that one's interesting. In that same mold, our guy, Russell Henley, my guy, he continues to play pretty well. And, you know, even though this field is stronger, there's no cut. You know, he plays well in the desert. Great iron player. Can putt decently. Like, how does Henley not make 20 birdies this week?
Yeah, how much money do you have to leave on the table this week?
Yeah, I think that's the interesting part because normally, yes, for these no-cut events, you definitely do. But then again, like, I mean, this field is pretty strong that, like, if you want to leave 600-700, like, that's the difference between, like, I don't know, Oosthuizen and Finau. Like, it's a sizable difference.
KC 8,000. I know you have to be masochistic to play him, but.
Yeah, fucked me up again last week.
One of the best drivers of the ball on tour.
Yeah.
And then I think, you know who's going to win this week? Because I had Ty Hatton this week. That was just a – I'm just going by feel now. I'm not going by data. I'm not doing too much over-analysis. Abe Answer.
I like it, yeah. And that Hatton shit, yeah, I mean, I had Hatton as well, but losing the Wolf double to a Martin Laird playoff win was bad. I like
the answer. Plus the way, Ryan, the way he did it, with the absolute sun running eagle from the, you know, being in the side of a bunker.
And that was his third eagle of the week on that hole. And then that ridiculous up and down after he shanks the tee shot on 17.
Had he, let's say, you know, sculled one on that par five, bogeyed it, he's going backwards. You could already feel he was going backwards. Poor Wolf, man.
Great. I mean, you knew that putt, that 8 or 10 footer he missed on the 71st hole was going to cost him after that awesome tee shot. But yeah, I mean, Wolf played well, and he likes that role of being the chaser on these courses where you can shoot, you know, 8, 9, 10 under par. So that's why I like him again this week.
Who's your pick this week? Or did I mention any that I'm.
Yeah, I think at the top, I think at the top, that's the way that I'm going. I'm going with that middle tier of, and I'm still undecided between Xander, Wolf, and Morikawa. I mean, I'm not concerned.
None of them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not concerned about Morikawa missing the cut last week. The guy shot 69, 67. Like, that's not a miscut. I don't care about
that. That's the big thing for people in DraftKings, maybe who are new to it, and they say, oh man, he finished 117th. Well, he missed the cut, so everyone finished 117th, really.
Yeah, like the guy made 10 birdies in two rounds. He shot 69, 67. Like, okay, I mean, you want to tell me he's not playing well? Yeah.
Where are we with Finau with this crisis going on in his life?
He seems to have a lot going on between the lawsuit and COVID. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I haven't had a lot of success playing guys off of a COVID layoff, even if it's just a couple of weeks. So I probably won't go there. I think there are some guys in that range where it just feels like the other shoe is going to drop. Like Oosthuizen, who's been playing out of his dome for a while. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Not sure he can continue it. Is Daniel Berger going to continue to be unstoppable every week? He surprisingly rates out very, very poorly for me this week. I was shocked to see it because he makes a lot of sense. And so I think those are the guys that, you know, I'm going to have a hard time with. Harris English, we saw him miss the cut last week. Like, is that a guy that starts kind of going back to where, you know, we're used to seeing him?
Yeah. I'm surprised Bryson's not playing this week.
Yeah, not sure. He was great last week. He just had that weird stretch on Saturday where he was what, plus six after five holes, but he makes so many birdies that, like, you know, he's always going to be a threat.
And then Matt Fitzpatrick again, 9,000 in this field.
Yeah. That's a lot.
After complaining about length last week.
Yeah. And like, we complain a lot about Fleetwood, but for $200 more, like, I think there's still a noticeable difference between Fitzpatrick and Fleetwood.
Especially how Fleetwood's played last couple weeks.
Look, I mean, they win about the same clip. Like, it's not like Fleetwood's some huge prolific winner and Fitzpatrick is not. It's just, I trust Tommy a lot more right now.
Hovland at nine may be the ace.
I like it. I mean, all those young guys, this just seems like a perfect event for them.
And then you go to this. So I'm picking Answer, by the way.
Love it.
That's my pick.
That's super off-brand for you, actually.
Very off-brand, but that's where I'm going. Like, it's Kamara as captain. My instinct was go Herbert as captain. Just be contrarian. But I just sheep myself into putting Kamara as captain for this Monday showdown. And the same historically with golf. I'll want to do something, but then I'll be like, nah, I just got to do it this way, which everyone else does. So I'm just going with instinct now. Like Hatton last week, maybe I'm on to something with Answer. I'm totally off brand with Answer.
That is not your pick. But yeah, I mean, I could see it. Like these sort of events, we typically get that. I mean, that a mid tier becomes a very valuable play. So yeah, I mean, I like it. I don't think it's a week for doubles with Scotland though.
No,
sadly.
Who is your pick though for CJ?
I guess Xander. I can't bet him at the number.
I can never. It's a never play. It's like Harris English. I just can never play Xander.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I'm just going to pick him here. I'm not going to play him. I'm not going to bet him, and he'll be great.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So now we're in the Scottish Open, another course that they haven't played, at least on record, if you go by greensquare.golf. So it's just a form play in terms of how these guys are playing recently. The key to this course, though, from Mike's notes, short game and putting, sometimes wind management. Traditional links defenses, wind, pot bunkers, burns, out of bounds, and rough. Par 72, 7,200 yards. Last week, Hatton played. I mean, Hatton's just playing better and better and better. His attitude is just getting better and better and better. In those moments where he typically would be yelling at himself, now he's singing. Did you see that clip on the European Tour?
Yeah, he's been great. And I don't know. I think I've been trying to put my finger on exactly what it is. And I think it's just he's not making mistakes. Like even when he's struggling, he's shooting a lot of rounds of three or four under bogey free, even when he doesn't have his best stuff. So it's very good.
He is, I think that within the next 8 to 12 majors, he will win one.
Wow.
You think?
He could. He's got the game. I guess I would expect him to probably contend in, you know, an Open championship.
The Open, yeah. Or a U.S. Open.
Probably a U.S. Open, yeah. It's just, does he have the mindset for it? But yeah, he's definitely improved that for sure.
All right, this week. I love looking at Eddie Pepperell because his form is pretty good. He's got two back-to-back top tens, and you know how good his short game and putting are. But I'm going down the board. I'm just going to go against against what I would normally do, which is play Matt Wallace. I won't. I know who you like. I'm going to say Oscar Lindgren. Initial reaction?
Great value this week for sure.
Yes.
I definitely like his price for DraftKings. Yeah, I think there's a lot of guys priced in that range who can contend. It's a fairly weak field, but they priced it like a very, very, very weak field. You know, Westwood's the favorite at 10-1. Pepperell's like 12-1. Like absolute joke. Aaron Rye's $11,000 on DraftKings. Like,
isn't that crazy? What's Minwoo Lee right?
Absolutely
now?
Not.
Minwoo Lee stand.
He was 66-1. So yeah, I think that's the range that I'd be looking at. I picked a few guys down there. Langdon, he definitely stood out a bit. I like Jack Senior, the type of guy who plays well on these golf courses. Look, it's a links event in Scotland. Like I'm gonna play the same guys. I like Carlberg a lot. I like Callum Hill a lot. I like my guy Adrian Meronk a lot. Like if you just play, you know, short hitting kind of links guys, you know, I mean, play Patty Harrington for all I care. Like that's a fine right. play this week, but yeah, the pricing it's for DraftKings, you go balanced for betting. You definitely go balanced.
From a down the board where's Ryan looking that nowhere else, no one else is. I know where your eyes are. Is it Marcel Schneider?
I honestly haven't looked, but I like Marcel Schneider every week. Makes a lot of cuts, makes a lot of birdies. He's won twice on the Challenge Tour. So, yeah, sure. I like him. I think if I had to look down there, I mean, one of the guys that I play on a lot of links courses is Matthew Baldwin. He's been bad a lot, but he finished fourth a couple weeks ago. He's a good links player. And, like, in this kind of event where links golf brings basically anybody into play, like, I could care less about recent form.
Yeah, I'm going Oscar Lengen, and I'm going Abe Anser, and that will be the greatest double of all time.
It would, yeah. I think it'd be time to retire after that one. Yeah, I mean, I'm torn here, but in that middle tier, I bet Carlberg and I bet Maronk. I'm going to pick one more. I haven't decided yet, but I'll take one of those, and I will take them with Xander Schauffele.
Tell me about Maronk.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I was a huge fan of him coming off the Challenge Tour. Excellent ball striker. I mean, I'll say he's a shaky putter, but they all are. But in his last start, he was number one ball striking. And, like, that's just always the first thing that I latch on to. Yeah. So that's basically it.
Right on, man. Have a good week.
All right, you too. Let's go play some second half showdown. Let's lose some more.
The second half started.
Shit.
Yeah, sorry, man.
All right. Well, you saved me some money.
Callaway's the nuts.
Yeah, he was.
But I was going to do a whole bit on the CBS logo too, but I thought I was going to completely lose people in the intro. But CBS, bringing this full circle, did a overhaul of their iconic, they didn't, some agency did, of their iconic eyeball logo. They split it apart. They made it move. And I thought in the whole framework of understanding what your label represents to someone buying it, news for the last 15 years has been really a gray area, because with the advent of social media and really the internet and blogs and websites, anyone became a newsmaker. Anyone with a story became real life, the reality. And then the place of both print news and these, you know, traditional news media became a big question mark. Where do they fit? And then in now, fast forward to 2020, and the importance a fact-based, sourced news and why these organizations have existed for so long became apparent to people. And maybe that JoeReport.biz, who has all these juicy secrets, may not be accurate or credible. And that may be just a loon bag somewhere making stuff up. And so the symbol of the eye, the CBS logo, and the iconography of that image became that much more important because it weathered so many years, almost decades, of dismantling of what facts and news are to the public. Again, anyone became news. And here it is today, and a lot of the large institutions that have been around forever taught us, gave us a lesson in what properly sourced news was, and how news and facts, before it's printed, for the most part, not always, needs to be done. And so to change that at this moment, when it weathered that entire storm, no, you go back in time. This is where we started, and this is where we are now. We're bedrock of the American landscape of news media and media. and things may change, and storms may come, and there may be political strife or worldwide pandemics, but we remain an iconic anchor in the bedrock of American media, and we have been for, what, 100 years? You don't break that logo apart. You don't mess with it, especially that, if you understand what you mean to a consumer in 2020. It's the CBS eye. That's something you just do not change. I just thought that was one of the biggest gaffes they could make. If you really want to understand what it is you are or what you mean to people. Not just news, but just, you know, it's like the Peacock for NBC. Watching Johnny Carson when you're a kid in the 80s. Or SNL. Just what that logo means to you and how it made you feel. Why'd you change that? Anyway, I'll save that for the end. I just couldn't let... I was not going to even talk about it. In fact, I did put it in the intro and I cut it out. I thought, nah, it's just too much. But that sort of... That just baffles me. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Answer this week. That's the answer. I'm just going with instinct, gut, feel. I'm not overthinking it. I'm going with answer. And Lindgren. Why not? Talk to you later. But you don't know this. To be true, you say I'm lying. I'll never really tell you the truth. But your face is getting older. So put your head on my shoulder. It kind of struck a little bit of fact. I like to keep my little shell intact.
Peace.